constantly since we got their brief. But I would direct the court that there are three cases you need to read to put this in perspective. One of them, which is cited in the briefs, is City of DeSoto versus White, which is which is the 288 Southwest 3rd 389 Texas Supreme Court case from 2009. In City of DeSoto versus White at page 396, the court said, in talking about section 311.034, this provision does not control in this case. First, this provision does not apply to the construction of all statutes. Read Labor Code. Section 311.034 specifically addresses waivers of sovereign immunity, an issue not implicated here. And what the court was saying is, because the waiver of immunity in that case, DeSoto versus White, was not conditioned upon the specific notice requirement at issue, then it was not jurisdictional. And that's the exact situation we have in this case. Also, you need to read the Lautzenheiser case, which is the 2004 Texas Supreme Court case, which is at 140 Southwest 3rd, 351. And in that case, the Supreme Court, again, talking about a notice requirement not being jurisdictional, said on page 357, the controlling statute in the Brown case, which they were distinguishing, was materially different. There, the statute of limitations prescribed that a claim for negligent or medical or health care treatment be brought within 2 years of the date the treatment was completing, and the statute used the phrase, notwithstanding any other law. And because the legislature included the phrase, notwithstanding any other law, the court said, in that statute, then you can't apply these equitable doctrines because the legislature has precluded them by saying, notwithstanding any other law. Section 311.034, which is also called House Bill 2988, when you want to look at the legislative history of it, does not use the phrase, notwithstanding any other law. Therefore, the government has subjected itself to the doctrines of equitable tolling, to the doctrines of due diligence with regard to service of process. And the third case is City of Dallas versus Hughes, and that's at 189 Southwest 3rd, 886, and that's a 2006 case, and most importantly, it's a petition denied case. And there, the Dallas Court of Appeals looked at the statute of limitations in a labor code case, and the governmental unit was asserting, well, it's jurisdictional because of 311.034, and the Dallas Court of Appeals said in footnote number 3, Dallas County also maintains that the amendments to section 311.034 of the Texas Government Code support the assertion that the statute of limitations is jurisdictional. In this section, the Texas legislature added the language, statutory prerequisites to a suit, including the provision of notice, are jurisdictional requirements in all suits against a governmental entity. This amendment and its legislative history do not support the broad interpretation asserted by the appellant that the statute of limitations is jurisdictional. The Dallas Court of Appeals looked at these same arguments and said, wait, that's not what this means. It doesn't mean all statutes of limitation are jurisdictional. It's only things that are a condition precedent to the waiver of immunity, and that is something we don't have in this case.
What page was
that? That is footnote number 3 in Dallas County versus Hughes.
What page?
889. And you'll have to remember, this court has already seen this case once. There was the issue about due diligence and service of process on the Attorney General or on the Comptroller's Office through the Attorney General's Office. And in the opinion you wrote, Justice McCoy, you did not say, wait a second, because of 311.034, the due diligence doctrine cannot apply and you're out. As you could have done if you accepted the comptroller's arguments, the court said, wait, you got to apply the doctrine of due diligence. And that's what we're saying in this case. Before you determine whether or not the filing deadline was met, you have to apply the doctrine of equitable tolling and waivers of immunity. And when you apply those doctrine, then it's determined that we met the filing deadline, and so there's not an issue here. The Attorney General's position in this case would have your prior opinion to be inconsistent with the statute. It would have your prior opinion be inconsistent with USAA, with all these other cases. Our position in this case is the only way that your prior opinion, the statute 311.034, USAA, and all these cases can be construed consistently. And in City of DeSoto versus White, the Court of Appeals said, the Supreme Court said, whenever you're looking as to whether or not a requirement is jurisdictional, you have to start with the presumption that it's not jurisdictional, absent a clear legislative intent. And in this case, when you look at 311.034, the legislative history of it, and the fact that it doesn't include the phrase notwithstanding any other law, there is no clear legislative intent. And the reason I wanted to direct the court to the idea that 311.034 is also called House Bill 2988 is because when you look at the legislative history of it, it was authored by Representative Nixon. He said in the background and purpose of the bill that the reason for adding this language to the bill was so that governmental entities would have the immediate right of appeal from the denial of a plea to jurisdiction. And that by giving that language about it being jurisdictional, now the governmental entity would have an immediate right of appeal. And it said, allowing an immediate appeal would permit the conservation of parties' resources during the determination of appeal. That was the legislative purpose. He did not say the legislative purpose is to allow the state to have another way out of all these lawsuits by finding some minute procedural defect and then saying it's jurisdictional. That was not the intent. So, in this case, you've got the issue where his testimony at trial was not the first time they had knowledge of this idea that he was told on March 1st. He testified to the exact same thing in his deposition, and they never made a plea to the jurisdiction. And throughout the trial, they never raised it until after the plaintiff had rested and the defendant had rested. So we believe they waived it. Now, with regard to the statute you were talking about.
How did they waive it by doing that? I'm hearing you somewhat about the request for admissions, although I'm still not sure how you combined the Attorney General's office with admissions, because I don't think you can. But continuing, I may be hearing estoppel, but how do they waive it just once it comes up? And they don't act on it, I don't think they have a duty to act on it until they choose to. Now, fair play might say, why should you go through all these hoops and try a case only to find out at the end they're going to let there's no jurisdiction? But how does that waive it?
Well, it waives it in that statute of limitations is an affirmative defense, which they did not assert. And that would have been something they would have had to assert.
Oh, okay, all right.
And so the City of Dallas versus White case also talks about that's an affirmative defense, and that's one reason it's not jurisdictional, because it has to be raised to be asserted. Also, the Lautzenheiser case, the Texas Supreme Court goes through the idea of notice provisions and says the state can choose to waive those if they want to, if they don't feel they're prejudiced by it. And that's what happened in the Lautzenheiser case. That there was a waiver. Now, I agree they're also estopped in that they never raised it prior to that date. I believe that the admissions also apply to them, because if there is a statute which they've never raised, the statute that says we can't be bound by admissions, but if there is a statute that says that, then certainly they should be allowed to waive that statute by never asserting it and by going ahead and answering the admission. And by doing that affirmative conduct of answering the admission, they're waiving the protection of that statute. So in this case, we have a situation where the jury has found that the gentleman was discriminated against on the basis of his age. The Attorney General's office has only peripherally contested the sufficiency of the evidence to support that, and there's overwhelming evidence to support it. Instead, they've put all their eggs into the basket of it's good to be the king. You can't get us no matter what because of this jurisdictional issue. But you have to read that in conjunction with the City of DeSoto case, the Dallas County versus Hughes case, and the Lautzenheiser case. And also, we have to remember the purpose of USAA is that the Supreme Court has said very clearly now, we do not like all this jurisdictional attack. We need there to be finality of judgments. And to allow this, even on behalf of governmental entities, you know, subverts the whole rationale of USAA and allows the jurisdictional issue. And to the extent the Supreme Court has said in USAA, our employment law is supposed to be consistent with federal law, you also have to take into consideration the fact that under federal law, the Irwin case, Irwin versus Department of Veteran Affairs, the U.S. Supreme Court has said the federal government can, you know, these provisions are not jurisdictional as to the federal government. So the question would be, if we're trying to be consistent with federal law, why would we so differentiate ourselves from federal law? Thank you, Your Honors.
I just have a couple of points I'd like to make. First of all, the cases that Mr. Lewis is referring the court to, those are cases, first of all, that predate In Re USAA, and I would argue that to the extent those cases are against governmental entities, that In Re USAA has, if not overruled those, at least superseded those in making it clear that when there is a statutory prerequisite to suit, that when the lawsuit is filed against a governmental entity, that it is always jurisdictional. And I just refer the court back to the language of Section 311.034 that says that statutory prerequisites to suit are jurisdictional in all suits against a governmental entity. Because this is clearly jurisdictional, none of the tolling or waiver or any other arguments apply. The plaintiff hasn't cited, or the appellee hasn't cited, any cases in his brief that would ever show that those provisions apply to the government generally, but that he has not come forward with anything to show that they would apply in the instance where there's a jurisdictional argument. There is an abundance of case law out there, but fairly recently, the Texas Supreme Court has made very clear in Barth versus or University of Houston versus Barth, and the citation for that is 313 Southwest 3rd, 817, and it's a 2010 Texas Supreme Court case, that jurisdiction can be raised for the first time on appeal, that it can never be waived, and in that instance, they remanded a case after a jury verdict to the Court of Appeals in Houston to make a jurisdictional analysis that the court had determined had been waived in that place. So it can be raised at any time. The state cannot be stopped, and there's no question that this is a statutory prerequisite to filing suit, filing a charge of discrimination within 180 days of the date the complainant knew or should have known of the adverse employment action. It's jurisdictional to the governmental entity, and the trial court should have dismissed this case for lack of jurisdiction. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for those very good briefing and very good arguments. Your case is submitted.